You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Game Play. I'm your host, Matthew Kaz. Joining me now, one of our favorite guests, host of the Minus 3 podcast, a great one today with Will Brinson was on it, and part of the Extra Points podcast network with Cousin Sal. You can go to extrapoints.com for more information. It's our old pal, Dave Damashek. Dave, how you doing?
Oh, Kaz, I'm just fine. I'm doing well. How are you, Pally?
I'm doing good. We had a snowmageddon here in southern Ontario. We had up to 40 centimeters of snow, but thankfully where I am, I was sort of north of it, away from it. So I'm doing good, but it's been a very snowy time for us Torontonians.
I love it. See, here stateside, we still don't fully grasp when you say, what did you say, 20 centimeters?
That yeah, they're 40.
Like that much.
40, it was 40 centimeters, and now as we're talking, I'm such a dummy. I'm trying to convert inches to centimeters because I stopped taking math after grade 10.
I don't understand that big canard that was passed off, and I don't know who's responsible, America or the rest of the world, but either way, I'm raw about it. It's enough. I don't like numbers to begin with in math, and then you tell me, we do it one way in America and the rest of the world does it the other, and we better figure it out. And, of course, narcissistic Americans said, screw that. We're not doing it. We're sticking with our way. And now here we are, and I have no idea how much snow you
15,
and the people of Ontario are dealing with. What's that?
15 inches of snow.
Oh, well, that's a lot. That's considerable. Good
that
for you.
Is.
Yeah, I heard it swept up through Pittsburgh on its way to you. So, I'm either way, I'm in sunny SoCal as we speak.
I'm quite aware of that. And, yeah, then there's Celsius versus, centigrade and kilometers, miles. At some point, we need to get on board. Dave, I wanted to start here just to give you the floor for a second. I've been a guy that's defended Ben Roethlisberger, the football player, when they won their first Super Bowl and everyone said that he was horrible against Seattle. I reminded everyone how good he was in the AFC Championship game against Denver. So I'll allow you a minute, if you would like, here about your thoughts on the end of Roethlisberger and what's next for your Steelers.
Well, I'll start with the second question. I think they'll go to the draft. We can hear all the talk about that Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and maybe Derek Carr and maybe Jameis. I don't know, a number of brand name QBs may be on the market when the season wraps up here. I don't suspect that that's where the Steelers go. I think that they find attractive what the Cincinnati Bengals have done. You know, the trick is, if you draft a guy to be the franchise quarterback, for him to actually be the real deal, and that's the crapshoot of doing it. It's a 60-40 proposition, even with a good general manager making that pick for you. But if you land on the right guy, the sweet spot to winning Super Bowls in the age of free agency is to have the real deal at the most important position for 5 years on a rookie deal. You can flesh out the rest of the roster. And so I imagine that they'll go for somebody in the first round, one of these student athletes, and ignore the cynics who decree that this class isn't good. It's not 1983. Every year, the college ranks yield good options in the draft. One, two. Regarding Roethlisberger, listen, what a thing it is in the aforementioned age of free agency. Once again, as a sports town, the one I like, but certainly it's universal and relatable to you, is it's just great when a guy plays his entire career in your team's uniform. We all have to delude ourselves into believing that these guys, when they arrive at 21 or whatever, to your sports town, care as much about the brand on their helmet as we do, the people who've watched it for decades. We're more invested emotionally than they are. But by the end of it, you can tell when a guy makes his run the entire way that with that one organization, it's meaningful to him. And when it gets sideways and you turn into a mercenary and chasing big deals, it's understandable to to secure the bag, as they say, and generational wealth. And for the next 200 years, a family is all set because that guy did good sporting and got paid for it. But it's extra sweet when the guy does it over the course of his entire career in one uniform, just like Mario Lemieux did, Willie Stargell, Mean Joe Green, all the legends in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So, awesome stuff. And I'll leave it at that.
Yep. It's good. By the way, it's just going to be weird not having, like, guys like that. They've been in our lives for so long. We don't need to talk about Brady, but it's just going to be weird not having Roethlisberger, just like as a Giants fan, not having Eli Manning. But getting to the bigger picture, I agree with you that the smart move seems to be the draft. The Colts tried with Phillip Rivers. The Colts tried with Carson Wentz. You know, for the most part, when you get these quarterbacks, even like unless you get an Aaron Rodgers, and then you're going to have to give up so much just to get him. You know, like everyone can point to the Peyton Manning success story, but then I could point to every other example where the older quarterback never delivered.
Well, right. The situation has to be contextualized, I guess. You know, do you think that the Steelers, if you put, a top 10 quarterback in the lineup, that they suddenly transform into a legit Super Bowl contender? You know, when Peyton went to the Broncos, he had his pick, and he went to a really solid roster. Tom Brady down in the Tampa St. Pete area, you know, it's funny for all the cynicism that people like, well, you know, it's not just Brady. I mean, that team's loaded. And look at all the other guys. You know, that defense is great, so don't give Brady too much credit. That's part of Brady's football smarts. He looked around and said, man, that team's loaded up, and I can win a Super Bowl with them. And now so he has, and perhaps he'll win a second one here. I'm not that keen on doing it that way. And, you know, I'm spoiled enough because of the team I root for that I'm not in a position to do what the Vikings did, whatever that was, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever. They're like, we're so desperate for Lombardi, please. Guy who has tortured us for the last 15 years, Brett Favre, please wear our uniform now and we'll cheer for you. We're not pathetic like that. You know, I'm not making fun of Vikings fans. I understand. You really want to see your team win a Lombardi. That's not the Steelers, fortunately, have won a bunch doing it the other way. So I think they'll try to. And by the way, Kevin Colbert, who is the guy who's going to be making the pick along with Mike Tomlin, is the one who put into place the Roethlisberger plan in '04 of veteran QB, then turn things over to the kid. I imagine why would he not try to replicate exactly that model in 2022?
I feel there was a little shot going against the Minnesota Viking fans, but we'll let it pass. We're joined by Dave Damashek. Follow him on Twitter, @Damashek. And again, the -3 podcast, the Extra Points podcast. Even go back and listen to the Dave's and Thunder podcast. You get them all where you find quality podcasts. What for you was the biggest takeaway from this weekend? And I'll include the Monday Nighter, but, you know, the Cardinals offense was just putrid out there. But if Dave Damashek is editor of the Tribune, what was the number one headline from this weekend?
You know, people always want these leagues and their network partners are incented to have as many fan bases engaged as possible. And that's what has taken us to, you know, whatever league you want to talk about. NHL and NBA have, for as long as I've been watching sports, have had 8 teams on both sides of the playoff picture. That's too many. The March Madness tournament that everybody swoons over, too many teams. And now baseball has the wild card. That stinks. I'm a man of merit. I would be more than happy if every postseason was as simple and streamlined as the way they used to do it 100 years ago in baseball. There are 2 pennant winners. They play each other. Best of 9. All hash settled. That's that and good night. But we have to have as many teams as possible. I mean, people have to have, I get it. It's fun. And by the way, week 18 in the NFL that had the Jags beat the Colts, and then the Steelers eked it out in overtime against the Ravens, and then you have to hang on the edge of your seat, Chargers and Raiders, till the last play of overtime. That was great stuff, and it's irreplaceable. And, you know, the Steelers didn't win the Super Bowl, but it made for an eternal memory for me, and I'm sure a lot of Steelers fans. And so I'm not going to poo-poo more teams, but the people bellyaching about how could they look at how terrible these games were. They got to get rid of that. These are the same people that want the college football playoff expanded to 12 teams. What do you think the result of those games are going to be? I mean, when Georgia would annihilate, I don't even know who the 12th seed would have been this year, but I can assure you they would have gotten annihilated by Bama, Georgia, or even Michigan in that spot. So, that's one takeaway. And, lo and behold, for all the smart people out there who say, like, quarterback, you know, QB win shouldn't be a QB stat, look at who's in the divisional round, and then get back to me about whether or not the quarterback is that is an essential item to have if you want to be relevant in January in pro football.
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. Then that kind of goes to the Jimmy Garoppolo question. One of the highest winning percentages is now a game away from going to the NFC Championship game, was a couple throws away from winning the Super Bowl. How do you, I mean, you know, I know all the, we could talk about Buffalo, Kansas City. That is going to be the most fun game. But San Fran, Green Bay, considering the stakes for Jimmy Garoppolo's career and also Aaron Rodgers, only been to one Super Bowl, you know, that's the one that I find fascinating when it comes to the quarterback conversation, is Garoppolo and Aaron Rodgers.
I agree with you, and Jimmy G is a sort of a vexing guy to stare at for any game, because he will do things within one game every week. They make you say, like, you know what, Jimmy G, little underrated. And then you say, oh, my God, Jimmy G, what were you looking at there? I mean, the fourth quarter pick he threw just about lost him the game. So he beauty's in the eye of the beholder, although we universally agree that he's a beautiful man.
We're
talking about the football guy. We're talking about the – although I still go Tom Brady is more handsome. But that's me. I'm old school. The Jimmy G is fine. He is one of those human exceptions that prove the rule that you need a high-end QB to be in the playoff picture and to have realistic hopes of making a Super Bowl push. You need to have a stud QB, a top 10 QB. The Niners are one of those kind of top-to-bottom organizations that defy that, but you see, not like, I mean, you're right. They were a throwaway from winning the Super Bowl. And to answer your question, I point you towards the actions in the draft last spring of John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. Clearly, they don't think Jimmy G's the man. They went and drafted somebody else at number three to replace him.
So weird. I mean, just everything. The 49ers are this. How often do you see this? Are the 49ers the, who? Okay. 49ers or Tennessee? Which is the team that has more talent, but yet we still don't fully trust the quarterback? Because I think we trust Burrow and Rodgers and Stafford, for the most part, Brady, Mahomes, and Josh Allen. But Tennessee and San Fran, lots of talent, but yet we don't totally trust the passer.
Yeah, that's right. But if I make it a pick going forward, I have to take the Titans because they have the bye. And having a bye in pro football is everything. And if you didn't like the 17 playoff structure this past weekend, you need to root for the Bengals to knock off the Titans because you don't want – because then it gets weird. Where it starts to look strange is to know, to your point about Chiefs and Bills, you know that those are the two best teams in the conference, and one is gonna go away after this weekend. And if the Titans win and they have home field, then they're gonna have a pretty good shot of surviving and getting to the Super Bowl. And we all know that the Titans aren't the best team in the AFC, but we know that they would have gotten there largely because they had that bye. So what you want is for someone to get in the way of that and mess that up. Because if the Titans get there, if the Titans get there, then that stink will be bad enough that then you'll say, like, we got to get at least two teams with byes, and that means getting rid of the seventh seed. But shame the devil, what that probably would mean is they would add an eighth team. And then a decade after that, they would just be like, I let everybody into the playoffs.
Hey, listen, at the very least, that first round would be pretty wild if they're all in the playoffs. Dave, as I let you go, and again, check out Minus 3 podcast. Check out the Extra Points podcast. Great place to go, especially before you place a bet. So I'll leave you with a betting question, my friend. What does the number have to get to in the total for Buffalo, Kansas City for you to take the under? Starts at 54. I've seen it as high as 55. I want to be the contrarian. I want to go against, you know, the public money and pretend I'm with the cool kids and the sharps. But I love the over. I don't know what number that has to be for me to take the under.
I mean, it's not a fun conversation to have because it's not fun to bet the under in a game that you would, as a football fan, should be hoping. There's no reason to think, hey, this could be a real fun defense. I love a good defensive struggle, but this doesn't track to be that. There's no reason it would be that. It wouldn't be satisfying if you're like, hey, got to tip your hat to these defenses. They really shut down these superstar quarterbacks in a 13-10 classic. It would not be a classic. It would have to be turnover fester, some other weird weather condition. Nobody wants that. No, don't be the guy caught standing at the dice table. You don't want to be the guy at the craps table standing there betting the don't pass line, even though that's the way it's supposed to be. It's amazing that an entire casino game pivots on the fact that it just is bad form and immoral to stand at the table and bet against the rest of the table. There's a reason you don't do it. Don't be that guy. Bet the over. It's going to be fun.
I am. You're absolutely right. That number could go to 60. I'm still betting the over. Again, everyone, go to extrapoints.com. Find the Minus 3 podcast. Your most latest one with Will Brinson was great. As always, Dave, appreciate taking the time. Enjoy. And next time on, we'll talk about we can talk about your Penguins, who have been on a hell of a roll and just got Geno Malkin back.
Holy hell, Kaz. Now it's time to toss the puck. It's time. And by, all I'll tell you is this. The Penguins are better off, just like your Leafs. They're better off with fancy competition. We don't want these knuckleball teams getting in our way like the Islanders and the clutch and grab jive. Give us Lightning. Give us Panthers. Give us Leafs and Pens. That's what the hockey fan wants this spring. Make it so, Bettman. Make it so.
Take care, my friend.
All the best, guys. All the best.
That is Dave Damashek from the Minus 3 podcast. All right, we got Josh Lewenberg joining us at 3:30. We'll get into the Raptors. But on the other side, I've been talking about it. If we have time, let's get to it. Sheldon Keith talking about Marner and Muzzin. That's coming up. But first, traffic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. Reminder, you can stream us at tsn1050.ca and the iHeartRadio app. Get all the shows live and on demand. Just go to iHeartRadio.ca, tsn.ca, iHeartRadio Canada. Yeah, you'll find it. You always can. By the way, the Leafs next game against the Rangers tomorrow night, 7 o'clock pregame, 7:30 puck drop right here on TSN 1050. And Mitch Marner made his return and had a goal and assist in the 6-5 win the Leafs had over the St. Louis Blues. And his head coach, Sheldon Keefe, talking about Marner coming back and scoring.
I thought he was great tonight. You know, for a guy that hasn't played in a while and just had the one team practice, joins us on this trip. He had good legs. You know, whether it was that goal or the big-time pass he makes on Matthew's power play goal to tie the game. I mean, that's what Mitch does. He's a game-breaker like that. You know, it's certainly nice to have him back in the mix here tonight.
And I can't wait now, just each game. And I know it's at 100 games now without a goal, without a power play goal. And that is obviously not ideal. But the first key for him when he's on the power play is what is the overall success rate of it? Yes, you want him to be shooting more because it makes him a more dangerous passer, but we saw a nice goal on Saturday, and he helped assist Austin Matthews, who again scored on the road 10 straight games. Okay, just off topic for half a second here. I'm looking here at the odds for tonight in the NHL there, Austin, and Tampa travels to L.A., and Tampa should absolutely, they should be the favorite. To me, Tampa, when Vasilevsky is in net, Tampa's the best team in the NHL. Period. End of story. But Tampa at minus like 218, I'm seeing where I can get the Kings at plus 181. They're at home. They're second in the Pacific. They've got a positive goal differential, 20-14-5. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. Tampa is clearly the better team. No one is arguing that. But that seems really, like, if you just want, if tonight you just want, because there's some good games, Florida, Calgary, Tampa at LA, and of course, Carolina, Boston. Like, if you just wanted to do some underdog parlay, like taking Carolina.
Kings won. Yeah. The Kings are second place in the Pacific. I don't think people are giving them enough credit to have that much added value on them. I have already opened my app, Matt, and placing a bet as we currently speak.
Yeah, it's just, you know, not a lot, but like, put down like $20 or something on the Kings. You're getting a good number. Also, I just think betting Kings, and I'd like to see what the odds are. And unfortunately, it's hard to do it while, you know, trying to host the show. We've got Bloomberg coming up. But I'd like to see what are the odds of just straight up Carolina and a Kings win tonight.
Yeah, so I actually have that on Betway, Matt. So no free plugs, but Betway. That you're looking at a 4.5-1 value on that. So $20 wins you 80.
Yeah. So why not?
It's hockey. It's a crazy sport. Anything could happen on any given night. So that's never a bad bet. There's such good value on there, but it's such a hard sport to handicap.
Yeah, exactly. That's why when NFL is done, we're definitely going to have to up our game on the NHL side. We've been living with how we've been doing with the NFL. Hey, speaking of which, do we got 30 seconds left before we got to go?
You have exactly 30 seconds. Wow, good for you.
Give me the montage of how I did with all my bets this weekend in the NFL.
I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
I know everyone's leaning the Raiders. I'm going Bengals at minus 5.5.
Raiders boss! Top of the world!
Deebo Samuel is... Why did I come on Deebo? Deebo. Deebo Sam... I just did it again. D. Samuel. What the hell is wrong with me? I'm giving myself a D for the way I pronounce his name. Taking the 49ers, 3-point underdog in Dallas.
Stuff that dreams are made of.
One of my rules, if you lost to the New York Giants, you can't win in the playoffs. I'm taking Tampa.
You believe in miracles?
Patriots are 0-5 when their opponent scores 25 or more points. I see Buffalo getting up early. I don't think New England's going to be able to catch up. It's not going to be a blowout. Give me the Bills over the Patriots.
With great power comes great responsibility.
And don't the Cardinals deserve the benefit of the doubt? Look who they beat on the road. The Titans, the Rams, the 49ers, and the Cowboys. Give me Arizona. Nearly 6-0, but the Cardinals' defense, woof, and offense, excuse me, their offense was horrible, getting blown up by the Rams last night. All right, we got to take a break. Coming up on the other side, the state of Siakam with Josh Lewinberg, but first, traffic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Cause. Raptors losing to a very good and much healthier Miami Heat team last night. Joining me now to talk all things basketball, it is one of the hosts of Raptors Beat, which you can hear every Thursday at 10 a.m. It is Raptors reporter Josh Lewinberg. Josh, thank you as always for joining the show today.
How's it going, Cuz?
I am doing very well. Been lucky. I'm up in the cottage country, so I survived all the ridiculous snow that hit Toronto. I hope everyone listening is good and is safe. I started the show today not talking the NFL. I started by talking about Pascal Siakam because I think things can get missed and slip through the cracks. But and Siakam, I mean, I wish there was, you know, he'd gone to the free throw line against Miami, but put up another good game against a very good Heat defense. But his game on Saturday against the Milwaukee Bucks, against Giannis, against that defense, that's maybe the best game we've seen from Siakam in over a year. I'm curious your thoughts on the state of Siakam.
Well, I think he's silencing a lot of the critics right now, right? And there's been a lot of them, justifiably so, over the last couple of years. But it seems like anytime anybody says that Siakam can't do this or can't do that, Like for a while, it was the Siakam's effort defensively is too inconsistent. He's been defending at a really high level recently. He had 5 steals yesterday. Pascal doesn't move the ball enough or isn't a good enough playmaker. He's taken that to a whole nother level this year. 10 assists in back-to-back games now. His playmaking, he's making all kinds of reads that we've never seen him make before. And then even the stuff, I get it after last year, but a lot of people talking about how he's not clutch, how he's not making plays at the end of games, and he's been a lot better in that regard over the last little while as well. I just really like, he's playing really well at just about every facet of the game right now, so it's balanced. His overall game on both ends of the floor is great, and consistency has been a key as well. He's doing it every night. It's not just 4 out of 5 games or whatever. So I like the way he's playing. I mean, he talked recently about how well he's feeling physically and mentally, and clearly that shows. I think with Siakam, so much of it comes down to the mental side of it, right? And he's in a really good place right now. He's talked about not getting too down on himself when things don't go well. If he's missing shots or doesn't have a good game, he's not being as hard on himself or as critical of himself as he has been recently. I think that's been a big part of it, because it does look like he's the Siakam of old in terms of he's smiling, he's laughing, he's engaging with teammates. He's been a really good leader off the court this year. And that's what Pascal Siakam looks like when he's at his best. That's what he looked like when he was part of the bench unit with Fred VanVleet, the bench mob. That's what he looked like when he was the most improved player and helped lead the Raptors to a championship. And that's what he looked like before the pandemic when he was an all-star and all-NBA caliber player. And I really think not only has he gotten back to that level, but he's exceeded it. He's playing the best basketball of his career right now.
I agree, and I've been someone who has been critical. I'm the one who has flirted with the trades with Golden State for oodles and oodles of top 5 draft picks and all of that, and I love that Siakam is pushing me away from that because he's been great, and I think it's fair to say the best version of Pascal Siakam is the one where he has more free throw attempts than 3-point attempts. Not that he can't hit the three, but when he's going to the free throw line more than he's taking 3-pointers, I think that version is the one that looks like a second-team All-NBA player.
Yeah, I do think, I mentioned this on the broadcast yesterday too, is one of the things that he's getting better at is, in addition, obviously, the playmaking, which is generally a point guard or a guard skill or one that you associate with guards. Another skill that I think you associate more with guards than anything else is like that recognition of what's needed from you. And when Kyle Lowry was so good at it, Fred VanVleet is becoming really good at it. And we're seeing more of it from Siakam, where it's like, okay, now it's time to make the play. Now it's the time to make the pass and get other guys involved versus now is the time to be aggressive and to get to the rim and to try to get to the free throw line. I still think as a developing playmaker and a guy that's getting more comfortable with handling the ball, initiating the offense, getting more comfortable with those guard skills, I think he's learning and growing in that area. He's gotten a lot better at it, but yeah, I mean, just in terms of being more assertive and aggressive and getting to the free throw line, you can't always control that stuff, but
nope.
Yeah, I mean, that's something he could probably do. Maybe that's the next step for growth for Pascal Siakam.
Yeah, and many nights he does it, and it's when you see that on a consistent basis, it's the best version of him. Like, he was great last night. He had 10 assists, but no free throw attempts, but where I sort of want to go from this, and it kind of actually leads to maybe no free throw attempts after having, I think it was 10 or close to it against Milwaukee on Saturday, is the minutes played. And my question, Josh, a big deal, little deal, or no deal, where VanVleet is first and Siakam's like third or fourth and Scottie Barnes is eighth. Like just, and we saw it last night where the bench played a total of 40 minutes. I'm curious, big deal, little deal, or no deal, the minutes distribution right now?
Well, it's not nothing. I'll say that, right? Like, I don't know that it's a big deal. Can we go with medium deal? Medium
to
big deal. Medium
yes.
to big deal. It's not sustainable over the course of a long season. I mean, you play 7 guys last night, and Justin Champagne only played 9 minutes. So primarily, you're leaning on 6 guys. And it speaks to the number of players that Nick Nurse trusts right now. Now, granted, two of the guys that are in that circle of trust were out last night. No Gary Trent, no Kem Birch. So with a healthy team right now, it would probably be nine guys that Nurse trusts, which isn't bad. Like, that's an NBA rotation. That's nine guys. But at the same time, things happen. As the Raptors are well aware, based on the way that injury luck and COVID has played out this year, and Nurse mentioned it before the season, that like maybe 5 years ago you wanted to have 10 guys that you felt comfortable playing, whereas now with the COVID protocols and load management and all that, you need a lot more than that you can count on. It was really interesting, just the stark comparison, the difference between the two teams last night. Miami, if they're not the deepest team in the NBA, they're one of the deepest. And they didn't even have Kyle Lowry last night, and Bam Adebayo working his way back from injury, but you've got all of this depth at just about every position. Like, Gabe Vincent is the guy that didn't even play the game before because they're starting to get healthy. He started and played well last night. Tyler Hero is probably the sixth man of the year right now. He's coming off the bench and giving you 20-plus points. Like, that's a nice luxury for a coach. Spo has it. I'm sure Nick Nurse would love to have it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what you do if you're a Nurse, because what's the alternative? Is you throw Svi Mihailuk and Utah Watanabe, who haven't been playing well, the two backup point guards who haven't been playing well. You throw those guys out there for a few minutes, and it costs you a lead and turns the game. And, like, I understand why he's leaning on the guys that he's leaning, but it's not a sustainable thing. So I don't know. I see it right now as being more of a front office problem than a Nick Nurse problem. I get the dilemma from Nurse's standpoint. I think if you're Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster going to the trade deadline, that's number one on the list right now, is trying to add some depth to this team so that Nurse has more guys that he can use to try and ease the workload on Van Vliet and the starters.
Was there any more reporting about, you mentioned the Miami Heat, we're joined by Josh Lewenberg, our Raptors reporter, and again, 10 a.m. on Thursday, it is Raptors Beat with Nikki Reyes and Josh Lewenberg, and the next Raptors game of this station is Friday against the Washington Wizards. Has there been any other reporting on Kyle Lowry? And it's not about Prime, because he missed the game for personal reasons, but you know, this is obviously, the magnifying glass is a little bit larger when it was going to be Toronto against Lowry.
No, I mean, I haven't heard anything. My hunch, and I've tweeted this, is that it's unlikely that we see him here on February 1st. Of course, that's the rescheduled game. It was supposed to be February 3rd. Now it's February 1st, which means that it's the second game of a back-to-back for the Miami Heat. They're in Boston the day before. So I think there's probably a couple of factors here. One, it wouldn't be surprising to see him get a load management night in that game, but I also think, just based on knowing Kyle and obviously the situation, probably still no fans in the building at that point, it wouldn't be surprising to see him skip that trip and maybe use the load management to justify it and maybe target that April 3rd game in Toronto as his first return, when hopefully there'll be fans in the building. Again, who knows about that, but certainly there's a better chance of there being a full crowd in April than there is in whatever that is a couple weeks from now. The big question, I think, is the January 29th game in Miami, whether Kyle is going to be available to play in that one. It's not as big as his return to Toronto, but that could theoretically be his first game against the Raptors, which we thought, of course, would happen last night.
Yeah, I mean, again, the first thing you hear, for personal reasons, you just hope everything is good. And then the other side, as a sports fan, you get disappointed just because you want to see it. You want to see, you know, so much of it is, you just want to see Lowry and Van Vliet hug, and then you want to see the two of them just do all the shady, shady things that they both know how to do.
Yeah, I mean, even going back to the origins of their relationship, of Lowry's mentorship of Van Vliet, I remember those stories of, like, they hit it off right away in terms of, like, there was a mutual respect there. And they saw a little bit, I mean, Kyle saw a little bit of himself in Fred, even as a young player. But believe me, as somebody that's been around Lowry over the years, it's not easy to earn his respect. And the way to do it is not by tiptoeing your way around Lowry. Van Vliet earned Lowry's respect by going hard at him in practice and competing and trying to take his head off, so to speak. So there's no question about it. When it would actually be a game setting, a competitive setting, when they're on two different teams, I'm really interested to see how that plays out eventually, because you know that both of those guys want to come out on top, both individually and collectively as a team, and get the win.
I just hope we see him sooner rather than later. Josh, as always, thank you so much. We'll hear you Thursday at 10 a.m. on Raptors Beat. All the best, my friend.
All right, Kyle. Talk soon.
Take care. That was our Raptors reporter, Josh Lomberg. We got to take a break. Sound of the day coming up. It's what everyone is trending and talking about. It's all the predictable yelling on Twitter. It's Jim Matheson versus Leon Draisaitl. But first, traffic.
This is Gameplay.
Can I get in on that?
On TSN 1050.
You broke his thumbs.
It was an accident.
Well, is that what you call it when somebody doesn't pay up?
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
I don't know what the odds are right now for who's going to win the Hart. But continue to keep an eye on Alexander Ovechkin. The last time a player of this age led the NHL in goals scored, and I think he's tied for the lead in points at the age of 35 years old. You got to go back to 2006-07 when Teemu Selanne had 31 goals in 51 games played at the age of 36. Usually you don't see players of this age after 30-plus games leading the NHL in significant categories. You got to go back a long time. And the guys before Ovechkin, Teemu Selanne, Brendan Shanahan, Brett Hull. And before Brett Hull, you got to go back to the beginning of the Second World War. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Cause. You are listening to TSN 1050. We do this at the end of each and every show. It's time now for Sound of the Day.
Sound of the Day! Sound of the Day! Here comes the Sound of the Day!
And for Sound of the Day, this came in just a little bit earlier, and this is going to cause such a predictable, everyone's going to yell on Twitter. Jim Matheson, longtime writer, he's covered the NHL for 40 years. Here is his back and forth with Leon Draisaitl.
They are in terms of winning and losing. What do you think is the number one reason for the losses now? Is there one thing that you, in your own mind, you're saying, we got to get better at that?
Yeah, we have to get better at everything.
Would you like to expand on that?
Nope. You can do that. You know everything.
Why are you so pissy, Leon? Why are you so pissy?
I'm not. I'm just answering your
question. Yeah, you are. Whenever I ask you a question.
I gave you an answer.
Not very good one.
Okay.
I have one more for you. Leon, you show your frustration on the ice last game against Ottawa. Is that a good thing when you show it so the other team knows you're frustrated?
Yeah, it's a great thing, for sure.
Sounds like Jim Matheson showed his frustration a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is a build-up. It's never a one-time thing. And here's how this is going to work if you are going to dip your toe in the old social media. Most of social media is usually a little bit on the younger side. Younger side is always going to favor the player. Not always, for the most part. Going to favor the player and not evil old man media. And then, so you're going to have the old established people going, what he did was fine. Then you're going to get a kabillion people under the age of 35, and they are going to rip on Matheson, and then someone's going to comment on that, and someone's going to comment on the comment, and then comment on the comment. And South Park explained it. I'm just going to tell you right now, over the next 24 hours, Twitter especially is going to be so predictable. My advice to everyone out there, you don't need to comment on everything. Take a look at the video and go, oh, okay. and then just move on. That's my advice. I doubt many people will take that. Will take my advice.
Yeah, that's good advice too. But that's not how. That's not the society we live in, Matt. So come on.
Now I say, oh, Steve Simmons is defending Jim. And by the way, I get why. Like hearing that clip, wasn't a great answer. Yeah, whatever. In the end,
my favorite one's still Ron Wilson and Howard Berger, I think.
Oh, that's good stuff.
It was.
Fest Chuck at Kessel. Oh, so many good ones. Here's my thing. This too shall pass, and in 48 hours, no one's going to give a bleep. But for the next 6 hours, this will be just empty calorie rage. Hey, have a great night, everyone. Fantastic NHL games. Consider taking Carolina and the Kings. Parlay them together to win outright. It's pretty good odds for two good teams. That is it for me. Overdrive is coming up next, but time now for News Talk 1010 traffic update.